Today I'm in Bristol with Claire Fussell. I'm going to get Claire to tell us her job title. So Claire, what is your job title?
Hello. My job title is Giving and Resources Advisor.
And when and where did we first meet?
Oh, that's a good question. I think we probably first met at something to do with Parish Share, I would imagine, because one of my first roles when I came into the job about 18 months ago was to go around and do workshops on Parish Share and encouraging generosity, and I think that we probably met at one of those.
I may confess to not necessarily going along to those, but I must have met you at some sort of diocesan thing.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Do you drink tea?
I do, yes.
And what's your favourite cup of tea?
My favourite cup of tea is a nice cup of Earl Grey.
Ooh, so Earl Grey drinkers get asked the subsidiary question, milk or no milk?
A little bit of milk, but it has to be quite strong. You don't want any of this grey tea.
Oh, okay. So strong golden coloured tea,
yes,
with a little bit of milk. I need to check, but I think the Queen might drink Earl Grey with milk.
Well, all the best people do.
So what would be your favourite cup of tea in the day? Do you have a time?
Well, I have to have two in quick succession when I first wake up, otherwise I can't function for the day. Okay. So I need to have one before I can really talk to anyone, and then two before I can talk to anyone about anything that makes any sense.
Yeah, I did an interview at 8:30 one morning on this project, and I was the person I was with, it was her third cup of tea.
She was sort of fully on the game by then, probably. You know, she knew what she was talking about.
She sorted herself out.
Oh, good.
So the question that I'm asking everybody is, how do you respond to the statement, Christianity in the UK is not dying, but sleeping?
That's a good question. I wonder, where does that quote come from?
So it's from an article in the Daily Telegraph by a person called Tim Stanley. Mm-hmm. And it was about 18 months ago, and I read it, and I didn't know what I thought about it. And I normally know what I think about things. So that's, it kind of became the focus of the project. Because I thought, being a good extrovert, I'd go and ask people.
Yeah. I mean, my initial thought when I saw their question was... But I don't think it's really dying or sleeping.
See, that's allowed because it's not my statement.
Because I think, you know, we hear a lot about churches being in decline and demographics changing and congregations getting smaller and older and all the rest of it. And I think that's the case in certain places. But I think that Christianity is a lot bigger than church. And I think that the understanding of yourself and your faith, regardless of whether you go to a church every week, sort of is bigger than what we count on our Sunday mornings. And so I think that it's still very much alive, and I think there are real pockets of encouragement and life and activity everywhere that you go around Christianity. So I'm really encouraged.
So in your work, do you go out and preach at different churches?
Sometimes, yeah.
Have you preached at one of ours?
Not yet, no.
Not yet. We have it on the list of things to do somewhere.
Yeah.
Ask Claire to come and preach. So do you go to different churches around the diocese?
Yeah.
So what do you observe there when you go to places?
Well, I observe, lots of different things in lots of different churches, because churches are as unique as individuals are, really. But one thing that I'm always impressed by is the fact that there are volunteers in our towns and villages who are basically running everything. They run the world, and they're often based in churches. So everything from caring for the elderly and working with vulnerable people and working with the youth and children's groups, it's running fetes and picnics and community events. It's all kind of comes from hours and hours of volunteer work from people who are often faith-based, so often have that comes out of a place of faith for them. And I just think that's incredible, really, and meet some amazing people from who kind of, you know, from all walks of life, but often retired, who have a bit of time and are just giving it to their community. And it's amazing to see.
Yeah, that is really amazing. And we, certainly in the rural communities, couldn't run our churches without the amazing volunteers that we have. Both, we have quite a lot of ordained volunteers, but our lay people as well, who lead services, apply for faculties, do the accounts, you know, all those things which in an organisation our size would be really costly to employ people to do for us. So, if you could change one thing about the Church of England, what would it be?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. It's a tricky one, isn't it? One thing. I think the one big sort of flashpoint issue at the moment in the media that everyone seems to be getting hung up on is sexuality in the church. And I think that if I could change one thing, I've had a magic wand, I would get everybody to agree on that, and for the church to be a sort of more welcoming and inclusive and open place for everybody to feel that they can be part of the family. Because I think that at the moment that can be such a difficult issue for people, and I think that that for those who aren't part of the church, they can look at it from the outside as being kind of antiquated and outdated and irrelevant, and they see that homophobic elements of that all fit into that picture of being not relevant, not modern, not open and welcoming, which actually isn't the case when you go to a lot of churches. But I think that it's that a lot of churches are sort of tarred with that same brush. So I think that if I could change one thing, if I had a magic wand, it would be that everybody would sort of get behind the sort of more inclusive church model.
That's really interesting. So I went to see Steve Chalk a few weeks ago, and of course they have a big thing about inclusive church now, and he's got into a lot of trouble from people who don't like that. And he has talked about how important it is for us to be open and inclusive to everyone, and he's actually been doing quite a lot of theological work on that, which is really interesting. How long have you lived near Bristol?
Well, I moved to Bristol just 2 years ago.
So can I ask you what your favourite thing about being in Bristol is?
Oh, well, I think that it's being quite close to the sea, actually, which isn't really a Bristol thing because it's not on the coast as such, but I've lived for most of my life in places that take a good couple of hours at least to drive to the coast, and I love it in Bristol that you can just nip in the car and be on the Bristol Channel within sort of 20 minutes, which is lovely. So I think being close to the sea probably.
Oh yeah, we forget how close we are sometimes. We used to live in Wellington, and we could drive to this to Devon, to the coast at Devon, in half an hour over the hills, yeah. 40 minutes. So that was really good for us then.
Yeah, it's lovely, especially this time of year, just to think, oh, what am I going to do today? Maybe we can just go for a coastal walk.
Oh, no, that's great. I want to ask you a question about generosity and about responsibility. But I'm not quite sure how to phrase it. So, how do you think Christians theologically should think about what it means for them to be generous to other people? Is that a woolly enough question for you to give me an answer?
What do I think that Christians should think? Well, I think that generosity is at the heart of the gospel. I mean, I think that Jesus was so open-hearted and open-handed and generous with his time and with his whole outlook, that he really modelled what it is to be generous, and he was of course modelling God's generosity to us, and with his ultimate sacrifice of giving up his life for us, then that's the ultimate act of generosity, isn't it, really? There's no bigger sacrifice to make for other people. And so I think that we have such a strong model of what generosity looks like in our, you know, in the Bible and in our following of Jesus, and that it goes through every part of who we are as Christians. And I think that sometimes generosity can get really narrowed down to thinking about finance and money, when actually it's about a whole outlook. It's about thinking about how we as disciples of Christ follow Christ and what that might look like in the way that we live our lives radically. And that can be generous opening of our homes and hospitality, and it can be a generous giving of our time to those who we wouldn't necessarily otherwise choose to spend time with. And it could be looking at our finances completely differently as well, and thinking, well, this isn't what I've been blessed with isn't mine. I'm only here as a steward of it, and it's down to me to make the right decisions about how God can bless others through the financial resources that I've been given. So I think that all of it really needs to be looked at through the lens of that discipleship, because we have such a strong role model in Jesus, and if we're following him, then it's about emulating that.
Why do you think vicars find it so hard to kind of preach about that or encourage people to be generous?
I'm not sure if they all do, actually. I think that sometimes it can be difficult, but I think a lot of vicars that I've worked with have a very strong kind of mission and vision to preach about this. I mean, I think that sometimes there can be a slight, perhaps a slight kind of equating of Christian generosity with PCC discussions about parish share and finance and things like that, which, as I say, is a kind of a narrow view of it. And by broadening that fully out and taking a step back and looking at the big picture of what we're called to be in Christ, can just open up such a wealth of fruitful conversation and teaching and discussion and exploration around what it means to be generous disciples, that there are lots of different angles that you can take without getting bogged down in kind of bureaucratic conversations about allocation of funds.
My experience, I guess, is maybe it's just me. So we did a sermon series on generosity a while ago, and several people in the congregation who've been to the sermons said, oh, that was really interesting, but had no idea that it might include money. Although I'm sure that the people preaching actually did say that. Mm. And I've had a couple of instances where I've decided, okay, I'm actually going to talk about money this Sunday morning. And people haven't known that's what I was going to do. I hadn't publicised it, and nobody came. I mean, literally, it was like a third of the congregation. I'm like, how did you know that I was going to say that? So I guess I got a bit dispirited sometimes. Mm.
I think that it can be a difficult conversation to have with people. I was talking to a church recently who did a whole series on materialism, and it wasn't focused exactly on giving money to church. It was on our culture of materialism, our culture of greed, and our culture of accumulating wealth for ourselves, and how as Christians we need to be countercultural and live differently. And but they said that it was really fascinating, because of the congregation that heard that message over a series of Sundays, a number of them found it transformational and really engaged with it and wanted to live differently and wanted to explore more. And others were quite angry and said, how dare you talk to us about money? This is, you know, nothing to do with church. This shouldn't be preached about in church. It's not a theological issue. And there's a fear sometimes when you're leading kind of bold series like that you're going to have a bit of kickback. But at the end of the day, I mean, Jesus talked about money a lot, didn't he? And it's there. And there are hundreds and hundreds of verses in the Bible that talk about our possessions and our wealth. And it's something that you can't really shy away from in life. It's a fact of life, and how we deal with it is part of our discipleship. So I think that there is a sort of fear that sometimes people aren't going to respond well, but I think it's about how you do it and how you can be kind of open about it. And
I know you came to you came to a meeting which was the last meeting I had before I went on sabbatical, and I'm nearly out the other end now. so shortly I should be returning back to the consequences of that meeting to see what happened. I've got another question which I ask everybody, which is, what is your favourite thing that begins with T?
Oh, well, I think my favourite thing beginning with T, turtles.
Turtles. Oh, yeah. Now tell me more. And then so why turtles?
Well, because before I came to this job, I had a job working in sustainable tourism, where we set up projects to conserve the environment and to employ people fairly and that sort of thing in tourist destinations around the world. And one of the projects was around turtles. And I was privileged to go over and volunteer for some time, just a few days, with one of the projects that measured turtles and did turtle watches and gathered their eggs and looked after the little baby turtles. And they were just the cutest animals, and they just looked like they've been around since the beginning of time. They're amazing. And so I fell in love with turtles a bit doing that.
So was that, did you actually dive with them as well, or did you just sit on the beach?
We'd have to do turtle patrols overnight, so we'd kind of gather at about sort of as it got dark, about 10 or 11 o'clock at night, and then for hours walk up and down the beaches where the turtles would come out of the sea to lay their eggs, and we'd look out for their tracks and follow them up into the dunes, and when they were there laying their eggs we would be able to measure them and track them and check that their eggs are being laid in a safe place, and if they weren't, then relocating them so they wouldn't get washed away, so because I think the turtle populations were so threatened by poachers and by changing environment with lots of tourist hotels being built along the beaches that they were endangered. So yeah, it was amazing to be so close to them when they're
I've been grilling you because my cousin Simon said that turtles were his favourite thing, but he hasn't spent time with turtles. He's only seen turtles in aquarium. So I think there's a kind of sub bit where I might say, of all the people that I've seen that don't know each other, of the people who should have conversations, so maybe I should put you and Simon together. You could talk to him about that.
I never thought very much about turtles until I met one, and then I loved them.
It's like, he's like, I've seen one in an aquarium and I know that's not the right place, but he's in scuba diving as well. So that's two second vote for turtles.
Yeah, good. Or they might win.
I'm not sure they're going to win. I'm going to add it all up at the end and
what's
see.
What's the front runner so far?
The front runner at the moment is time.
Ah.
Mm. But people come with that from various places, including my friend who's a lecturer in theoretical physics. So he said time, space-time, okay. But yeah, there was time to two for turtles, two for Thai food. So there we go. Thanks ever so much then, Claire.
All right, thank you.